Hey, hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 651. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Still a lot of wrestling.
Oh, that's been, that's taken up the majority of my life in the last week, for sure.
Yeah, and we decided to add to the pile just for this show for because reasons.
Yeah, today was supposed to be our slow day for anything new in wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Impact is on currently because I definitely saw some tweets in the Stunt Granny feed. I am not currently watching it, though. As I am watching some soccer, but the WWE dropped some pretty serious news in our lap late this afternoon, I would say, or middle of the afternoon, when they made several cuts to the roster. And I would definitely say that the headliner of the class was Samoa Joe. And I wondered if he needed to be released to sign him as on-air talent. You know, maybe he needs a different type of contract. But I would say his Twitter responses have not hinted at something like that happening.
No, it has not. And that is definitely a befuddling one. Certainly one of the two most befuddling ones, as he was on commentary for the half, if not the majority, of WrestleMania. He was just there.
I mean,
we'd already heard that Tom Phillips was being reassigned.
Well, and I guess not I. A part of it. And I hadn't realized that he had another role in the company, that he's like some type of studio manager or something like that.
Yeah, he's like manager of on-air talent. I thought that was Michael Cole's job, unless Michael Cole is called the producer and he's Tom Phillips' boss. But then what the hell does Michael Cole do then? Everything going all right, Tom? Sure thing, Michael. All right, my job's done for the day. Oh, you hate that. Everyone hates that manager at their office. your manager's manager. What does he really do?
I would hope he would offer advice every now and again, but maybe. but it is a pretty lazy title to have. So yeah, I guess I was a little bit surprised. I'm like, oh, I guess I didn't realize that Tom Phillips had another role in the company just on its, you know, like that was one where I'm like, oh my God, is he getting, I guess I kind of thought that he was getting not, maybe not booted out of the company, but I guess I wouldn't be completely surprised. No, he didn't show up at NXT at all.
No.
Because they stuck with Vic, Beth, and Wade.
I think on air he's being Tom is being busted down to 205 Live.
Oh, that's right. I did see that. Completely forgot about that part of the news.
But the main story here is WrestleMania announcer Samoa Joe.
Oh, yes.
It has been released, you know, 4 days later. It's definitely quite the befuddling one. No one knows if he asked for his release, if he still wants to wrestle, but they won't medically clear him. Did they offer him the a permanent announcer's position, and then he refused because he wants to still wrestle? I would have taken the commentator's job that got him a full employment benefits, as opposed to still trying to have an in-ring career at his age with all of his list of injuries, but I'm not him. So, yeah, right. I'm not sure what precipitated the release of Samoa Joe. I guess we'll find out over time. That, you know, whether, you know, they just wanted rid of him, which would be a very foolish move on their part, including as a commentator, whether he, you know, just was not open to continuing his commentary because he wants to continue his in-ring career till he truly can't continue with his in-ring career no more.
That one was the only one that I guess, like, within the list that came out, and it was probably a good thing that we always record a little bit later in the day because a couple of names did pop out a little bit later in the day. But his was the only one that really stood out to me. You know, like, everyone else, I am not surprised that the WWE had soured on everyone else on that list. Like, because even Billie Kay, she had a gimmick, but she definitely was not utilized to even her full comedic potential, I would say.
No, she was not, but as someone who, not counting Joe, still active, I think overall she had the most off. If they kept her on and found her the right role, I believe that fully. So that one's a shame.
No.
More than just about any other ones, because we don't know the story with Samoa Joe fully yet.
Right.
So that one seems like, you know, she was just on WrestleMania. She got the score in elimination. They just put her and Carmella together. And then they let her go.
Hey, yeah, I mean, that's one that I will always, like, just not understand why they decided to break up her and Billie Kay, or, good God, Peyton Royce, who also got let go. You have a tag team division. Both of them are better together, like... Like, yeah, I guess I never understood the WWE blowing up their own women's tag division, like, almost immediately after starting it by breaking up Royce and Kay and the Riot Squad, like, right after the championships had been introduced, essentially.
Yeah, no, I don't understand that at all. No, you know, I believe that Billy and Peyton should have stayed together and kept doing their thing. They could have moved in and out of the women's tag team title picture, you know, and gotten a nice run out of it. Instead, they were split up. You know, Peyton Royce was unfortunately completely exposed without Billie Kay as not being up to stuff in the singles division. And yeah. Billie Kay was finding her niche as a comedic character, but even that had fallen a little bit by the wayside. The stuff with her and the Riot Squad, her trying to get in with all these different tag teams.
Yeah, before that spot at WrestleMania, she had been. I guess I had been wondering if she would even be involved, but then it was just like, oh yeah, we need to get Carmella involved here too. So Billie Kay came back into the picture. Like, she had been quiet for a few weeks prior to that, I felt like.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I guess that's why I wasn't surprised. I do think that there's something there with that tandem. If someone decides to pick them up. But I do wonder at how much that's going to, you know, yeah, they definitely need to find their roles if they move somewhere else, I suppose. Like, it'll be kind of interesting. Like, I don't, because they're not really on the young side of the female talent either, I don't think. Now I need to look that up. Just because some of them, like Toni Storm, is really young, Rhea Ripley is pretty young, I was at least slightly surprised. Jeremy and I hadn't looked it up, but Bianca Belair, 32.
Yeah.
So a little bit on the a little bit on the older side for her. But
Billie Kay is 31.
oh.
And by the way, everyone out there, Kevin DeFranco is the one calling women old after they pass 30, not me, Chris Kalamita. I just want that known. Send your hate tweet to @DeFrango11.
Peyton Royce, 28.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, she's pretty young then. Hey, sub 30. But I mean, A, I think it has always been established that sports-wise, especially recently, people have definitely, well, A, wrestling seems to extend your sports life so if you would so choose. I mean, Shayna Baszler is our age, if I'm not mistaken, or close to it. I think she's a few clicks younger than me, but she's definitely not a spring chicken. But anyway, yeah, I mean, there is. I guess my point is that she's been kind of wrestling for a while now, and if she, it's kind of hard to improve at that point. I guess I know that the Bellas are definitely an example that you can look to that really change things around in ring wise after they met their. Well, I mean, I guess for Nikki, it's not significant other anymore. But, after her and John Cena got together, like her ring style really changed drastically. And Breeze definitely changed after she started dating Daniel Bryan. It, like, they would need that kind of a transformation, I guess. And I guess I don't really see that coming from Billie Kay.
I don't think Billie Kay needs that at all. I don't think Billie Kay needs to wrestle. Billie Kay could absolutely be a manager of something of that sort.
Yeah. Good point.
Tony Khan, here's an idea, Tony Khan. Sign her up and get rid of Vicky Guerrero, who has nothing in 2021. And make her the women's and make Billie Kay the women's manager. There we go.
I guess the other woman on the old list here is Chelsea Green. She definitely had some bad injury luck.
Yeah, she had some setbacks. Certainly, yeah, she certainly had some setbacks. It's unfortunate. Once again, I don't know if outside of Impact and the Laurel Van Ness and the what did she call that other to that persona? Of the bride. What does she call that?
Train wreck? No.
The
Hot
hot mess,
mess.
not.
Hot mess.
Hold on. But anyway, in NXT, I never really saw Chelsea Green show that much. I mean, she was fine. She filled a role, but was never anything that was too special either.
Yeah, I mean, that's one where I guess she almost fit better on the main roster than in NXT, just because of the quality of women in NXT currently. But yeah, like I guess I don't feel like she got her chances, but then, 'cause I don't think the Robert Stone brand thing at first, if memory serves, I want to say that the first time she got called up to SmackDown, they just kind of had her sit around. And then she finally debuted and broke her wrist.
Yeah.
And then came back out a third time and broke her wrist a second time. So, yeah, like, she kind of got yo-yoed around a little bit. Like, it seemed like they thought she was, you know, obviously ready to go to the main roster that early on. And, I mean, I guess I've always liked her wrestling. Like, whether I think that she's can crack my top 10 list in the WWE, like, I don't know if she cracks a top 25 list in the WWE, to be honest with you.
Right. No, she was always fine. She certainly, you know, could be a role player, but with all the setbacks and all the other talent, you know, in the pipeline, this is not surprising.
Oh, yeah.
If this day had to come where they do 1 year to the day since the last time they did this, they have to do these releases even though they are turning record profits.
That honestly is yet again probably the ugliest part of this. Like, Jeremy's they're saying they're doing this for budgetary reasons. And I'm like, I thought to myself is there some legal obligation that you can't say that they weren't performing or something like that? Like,
I hate that being that used, because it's just like you're making record profits. There's no financial strife. I don't know if these 10 people combined might make a little over $1 million a year.
Yeah.
You just blew up over $500,000 worth of fireworks over WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah. I don't need to hear about fiscal responsibility when I just saw
I understand the point of, they stockpiled so many people in all their locker rooms, throughout the performance center, and they're not making TV. You did nothing with them, which is your fault. Make no mistake about it. There's no one on this list necessarily did anything wrong. You know, that's their fault for signing up everyone under the sun and then not having a plan for what to do with them.
Yes.
So yeah, that's all the part of this that really sucks. Otherwise, it's most of these names, it's understandable that they really weren't doing anything with them.
Yeah, that's why the Samoa Joe one was really the only one that was shocking amongst those. Like, everyone else, I'm like, I'm not really surprised. Like, because, Steve Cutler was another one. Was Wesley Blake on the list?
Cutler was let go months ago over throwing a party that a bunch of people got sick at over New Year's Eve. Now Blake is fired, but fucking Jackson Ryker is still under contract. That is the other shitty part of all of this. You could have hidden, you know, getting rid of Ryker, Velveteen Dream, you know, the referee, all these problem people, maybe even Riddle depending on how you feel about him or what have you, or Devlin, who's had some pretty serious allegations against him, Theory, you could have gotten rid of all those types of people under the guise of budget cuts without having to worry about them coming back and suing you for some sort of, you know,
wrongful termination,
wrongful termination or whatever based on, you know, whatever. That's the sucky part. that's the other shit. You know, hiding behind budget cut reasons and not letting go of your most problematic independent contractors, using this as an excuse, I should say, to get some more problematic independent contractors. That's the bullshit. Those are the real two bullshit parts of all of this.
Yeah.
And of course, they just could have kept people, ran them in and out, used them in television job situations, what have you. Send them to NXT, send them, you know, use them at 205 Live, what have you. So, yeah, I understand people's frustrations with how this is done, because it just feels so random, the people they pick to get rid of. And it's nobody who makes a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, that is the biggest part, too. Like, Samoa Joe probably had the biggest contract, I would imagine.
Oh, I imagine, yes.
But also, I don't think it was that big of a contract. You know, no, like, in the scheme of things, you know, I would imagine there are quite a few other wrestlers that have higher billing than him. Because, yeah, they weren't saving a lot of money with Tucker. They weren't saving a lot of money with Kalisto. I would assume they're not saving a lot of money with Bo Dallas getting the axe.
Yeah, no, like, there's...
But, yeah, like, those guys weren't really being used, so it's not really much of a surprise that they have all been let go.
Yeah, it's not a surprise. You know, we're running a business here. It's not a charity. I understand all that. You know, a lot of people have way more upset and visceral reactions to this than I do. But it, you know, the elements of, you know,
the hiding it part is the icky part.
Yeah, that's the icky. It is the icky part. Yeah.
Just say what it really is. You know,
and just use the old standby. Creative had nothing for you.
Yeah.
Which someone, I don't remember, I don't know if they ever said who said this, then one time when John Laurinaitis made that call in the last 10, 15 years of somebody, he's like, well, creative didn't have anything for you. Well, why are you not firing them then? That's their job. I'm doing mine.
Yep. So that, I guess that ends the not so fun part of this podcast. It really did need to be gotten out of the way first, though. Like,
yeah, it came out today. It would not have the same impact if we talked about it on Tuesday.
Well, it definitely wasn't waiting until then, but
right.
I guess, which way do you want to stay, within, the WWE and, do NXT? Because I've got to admit, there isn't, a ton to take away from the, first, NXT post Stand and Deliver, I would say.
Sure. Let's start with NXT.
I think that one's a little easier to buzz through. because honestly, actually, the only thing not, buzz through worthy, would be the fact that, Kushida ends up winning the Cruiserweight Championship. Like, I guess that's the first thing that pops into my mind without even really looking at the review here. I found that very interesting. Like, I was kind of, I've got to admit, I was a little bit tapped out of the match, assuming that it was just going to be another win for Santos Escobar.
Yeah, but they seem to have big plans for Santos Escobar and wanted to get that cruiserweight label off of him as soon as possible.
Yeah, that was the one thing that I was wondering. I'm like, is Santos moving up in the world because of how much they like him?
I assume he is. You know, Kushida's had some, you know, been around longer than you'd probably think at this point. He's certainly had some good performances, but up to this point, when put in the big match, he always lost. So this was a good reward for him, because once again, Kushida is always very, very good. Even in situations where you wouldn't maybe expect him to be very, very good, he's certainly carried some people to some good matches. Him and Escobar had a really good match. One of the few cruiserweight matches that actually caught my attention. since, oh, you know, really,
yeah,
you know, I make it a point where we're going to say that cruiserweight, that just, if you slap the title cruiserweight on something, at this point, it's just defines it down. But it was a nice win for Kushida. You know, he'll, for whatever it's worth, he'll be a good cruiserweight champion.
Yeah, there's never going to be that much of a draw for the cruiserweight championship, I don't think, in the WWE. Even in NXT, like, they have definitely done a better job of making it visible, but it really hurts that they also have it, well, and it's probably going to hurt even more now that they have women's tag team champions. Like, they do a pretty good job of keeping their champions on TV, but, whew, man, that's a lot of champs to juggle for a 2-hour program.
Yeah.
And I guess there is 205, because are they still doing 205 Live for Peacock?
Yeah, it supposedly still goes up after SmackDown every week.
Okie dokie. Oh, yeah, I guess Tom Phillips wouldn't be going there if it didn't still exist.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, that I that does make the most sense in this situation. And I hope that's what the case. I would hope that he would head after the North American Championship. I would think would be the next stop for him.
Yeah, I think it'd certainly do something with that. If he's gonna stay heel, not right away. Because Johnny Gargano is still the North American champion.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, down the line, they certainly could go in that direction.
We'll see where it moves to next. But, yeah, it would make sense for it to happen a little bit later down the line. So, that was kind of the biggest match of the night. I guess I wasn't terribly surprised that MSK ends up winning their first title defense against Killian Dane and Drake Maverick.
Yeah, no, that's no surprise.
They had some nice segments about the Robert Stone brand owing Mercedes Martinez some money, but I just have a hard time believing that it amounts to much of anything other than a very short term feud like that. Yeah, that's one that's just kind of here and there. You know, it's serving its purpose, but it's nothing to talk about, really.
Yeah, no, it's undercard stuff. I mean, really, for the most part, the whole Robert Stone brand thing has been. I mean, at this point, it's beyond comedy. How long Aaliyah's been in NXT, and she still really doesn't stand out at all, even after her. So everyone's. From when she started, has long moved on. It's total undercard. It's undercard stuff. It's whatever.
Yeah. So I guess the next other big thing, really would have been I know that I saw the picture of Bianca Belair, Raquel Gonzalez, and Rhea Ripley all together in NXT. So they had a fun little reunion moment on NXT this week too.
Oh, gag me! I hate it. It's just Triple H self-congratulating himself. Oh, just like why? Last we saw Rhea and Raquel was like throwing Rhea through tables and walls and shit. Bianca and Raquel almost never interacted with each other. It's like, gotta have this crying emotional moment. I'm like, yeah, it didn't land with me because I'm just like, I knew what it was. It's just like Triple H patting himself on the back. I'm like, no, there's just no need to do this. We're trying to build Raquel as a top heel here. We don't need this.
Yeah, I expected there to be more of a showdown, honestly, between her when Rhea came out first. Like, again, I guess I had seen the picture, but I wasn't thinking that's what was going to happen. Like you said, like, they had just been fighting each other. I expected some type of challenge to get thrown out there, something.
Yeah, no, it was just self-congratulatory BS. I, other people were moved by it. I certainly was not.
Well, and I just kind of have to laugh that that picture wasn't taken that long ago. Like, some of these guys, like the Finn Balors of the world and whatnot, you know, or even, actually, that's probably not a good comparison. A good comparison would be Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole. Like, some of their pictures, you're like, holy smokes, I can't believe how long ago you guys met and you guys are still fighting against each other.
Yeah.
You know, I'm happy for all the ladies. I enjoy all their work, but I guess I'm kind of with you. I maybe didn't need to be gagged, but it's like, whatever, man. Like, it wasn't that long ago and they needed to bump some of these ladies up, you know? Like, there is no reason not to.
Yeah, they need to bump more up. This is, you know, you talk about, you know, Peyton and Billy, that's two more bodies gone. That's one more body that was on Raw and one more body that was on SmackDown. If you look at them, there's nothing more than that. These divisions are still messy. Well, what does Triple H now have? What does NXT now have? What, 20-plus women that they can move, that they move in and out and feature? From the top of the card all the way down to the ladies in the Robert Stone brand?
Something like that. Hey, like, I legit like, have to look at it, but they have a lot of women on the roster.
They do, and it's too much for what their needs are and for where Raw and SmackDown are right now and have been for a good chunk of the last year. No, it's beyond time. So, you know, for, you know, someone to put their foot, for Vince to put his foot down and say, I need 4, 5, 6 of these women.
Well, and I can't, because does Stephanie have any oversight?
I don't believe so. Not creatively, no more, no.
Anymore? Okay. Like, I couldn't remember if she had a role in Raw and SmackDown anymore.
Not really, as far as I... ever, as far as I've heard nowadays. So no, it's just like it's just madness that this NXT women's division is allowed to be this embarrassment of riches while Raw and SmackDown just get to be an embarrassment.
Yeah. It's pretty rough.
And that moment on NXT just didn't land with me, and if anything it made me want to gag.
Now there was a moment right before that I did not honestly get a chance to go back and listen to it, but Frankie Monet debuted and seems to be in line to challenge Raquel Gonzalez already.
I don't know if that's what further going or what, if that's the story or not, but yeah, no, I mean, she's a veteran. She's been around a long time. You might call her old. I wouldn't, but but no. Yeah. You know, fine, I guess. But once again, it's this log-jammed women's division that doesn't need to be one.
I mean, I do still think that, honestly, well, and there could be even more of a logjam, which... I just honestly believe that at least, what's her name? Io Shirai, I would think, is headed for the main roster.
I would hope so.
I know that the main roster does have a problem handling Japanese women, but Saray is headed to NXT here soon. And honestly, NXT hasn't exactly been keeping, you know, I mean, they have moved along most of the people that have been champions to the to one of the main brands, you know, to Raw or SmackDown.
Yeah, they've done that. Hopefully that this will be one of those things, because, you know, Io doesn't need to linger around, lose to Raquel again, get involved in undercard feuds with somebody else. Yeah, it's definitely time for Io to go up. All right, well, you know what? You talk. I'm going to count how many women are actually on the NXT roster.
Well, yeah, that adds, I'm only subtracting out Io, and I'm trying to think, they definitely could take someone else, because Frankie Monet being there is another body in the situation, who's there at least for a little bit, and then Saray comes in too, and she still, and she still has some experience under her belt too, like, that. I do think that that helps the Japanese women. They definitely seem to have more times than not, they have more experience. Obviously, Taya Valkyrie, a.k.a. Frankie Monet, has a poop ton of experience at this juncture.
And if you add those two, Frankie Monet and Saray, in the NXT women's division, the women on NXT that get some degree of a push and are on TV every week or every other week. You know, they get some degree of
every
a push.
Every other week works. Yeah.
21. 21 women who are in some way featured on the NXT television program on a regular basis. Not including the ones who are listed, but they're just there to do TV jobs every once in a while.
I would imagine that,
and I don't count Scarlett, who doesn't wrestle.
Okay. I'm assuming that you're counting, Casey Catanzaro and like Lacey Evans as one of the two of the 21. Caden Carter.
They're still officially on the roster.
Well, no, I was wondering if they were in your 21 or if they were off of your 21 count.
They're on my 21 count. Also, okay. I like to count, even though maybe it's not necessarily fair. I counted Tegan Nox, who's out with an injury, but, you know, still technically on the roster.
Okay. Yeah.
If I take out Vanessa Bourne, who I have no idea what's going on with her, you know what? Let's say it's 20.
That's still a lot of people.
Yes, it is.
That's a lot of bodies for, like you said, like most of them are only featured every other week, which is fine. It works out pretty well that way. The champ usually gets more TV time than that. And yeah, Shotzi and Ember are getting screen time almost every week at this point. And I would imagine whomever is going to go after them as a tag team is going to start to get some TV time here too. But yeah, I do think that you can tell that Raw and SmackDown has been short on women's content recently.
It definitely has.
Because NXT is... Again, like, I mean, we started this when Ember Moon came back. Like, that to me became the real moment where it's just like, what is going on here? Like, I do completely understand any wrestler, like, to me at this point, if you're in the WWE, I'm like, no, I don't want to leave NXT. This is stupid to go up to the, like, I understand that there's a money difference. But creatively, they really seem to do way better of a job with people on NXT in general than on Raw and SmackDown. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's why you have people like Ember
Okay,
Moon
wait.
going back. But I also
Right
wouldn't
now,
be.
go ahead. Go ahead. No,
Oh,
no.
I was
Like,
gonna say
right
that
now,
even
the
a little bit.
SmackDown women's roster. Oh,
Yeah.
sorry. Right now, the SmackDown women's roster, only 9. After you subtract Billie Kay.
Oof. And honestly, like
And one of
that,
those is Sonya Deville, who's not wrestling right now.
well, and Carmella has not. She lost. Carmella lost to who's the champ? Who's the champ? Why am I
Sasha.
Sasha?
Yeah, Sasha
She,
twice, yeah.
yeah, she loses to Sasha twice after kind of having her big makeover character, and she had been pretty off the books as of late. Like she lost those two matches, and it's like, oh well, we don't know what to do with you now. It's just like, huh? Like, yeah, I don't get how you can't have something for Carmella or any of the other women on that roster. Like, it's, yeah, they need more bodies. Just
Yes.
the period. It's a numbers game, and to have a women's roster, you definitely need to have more than 9 people on your main show or one of
Raw
your main
has
shows.
13, but that's also counting Becky Lynch and Lacey Evans. So 11 active currently.
Ooh, yeah, and I mean
And one of
that.
those is Nikki Cross, who hasn't been on TV in ages, and Alexa, and another one is Alexa Bliss, who's barely wrestling anymore.
Oh, yeah, she has not really wrestled that much in the last 2 years. So, yeah, it kind of makes you wonder, after being a linchpin of the division, why she's been sidelined for this long is pretty weird. And the fact that she's gotten that much TV time in the meantime is quite impressive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow, we weren't going to talk about NXT for a long time. But hey, a log jam women's division is going to do that for you.
Yes, it
It's
definitely will, because it applies to what happened today and what's been going on for quite some time.
yeah. Yeah, I don't. Swerve Scott and Leon Ruff, anything to be taken away from that one?
I have no memory of that. I'm pretty sure it was it, but I have no memory of it.
It does look like one thing that is kind of interesting, and we were talking about it a little bit. It would seem like Walter is staying on this side of the ocean for at least a time period here.
I'm actually not sure about that, because he physically wasn't on the show.
But didn't they say Imperium is here to stay? And they kind of had a picture of he was in that picture.
He was in the video, but he wasn't with them when they beat down Dana
Oh, and Drake Maverick.
and Drake Maverick, yeah.
That is true.
So that's interesting. That's definitely interesting. I'm kind of hoping he sticks around, or you know what? They were teasing it before pre-COVID, but I guess the match I'd like to see him with is Finn Balor, now that Finn Balor's freed up. So I guess they could do that
No.
on either side of the pond.
Yeah, I'm probably not gonna end up watching it if it's on NXT UK, but hey,
Oh, you know? Oh, no, you are.
Yeah, I think now that I got more of a taste of Walter, I think I've got to seek that out. And it's one of those things that the commuting situation being what it is, I have certainly started to watch more things on my phone. So I might just need to get my Peacock account on my phone to be able to watch maybe a Walter match while I eat my lunch. If nothing else, especially if it's Walter versus Finn Balor. Because yeah, I do love me some Finn Balor. And then yeah, we just kind of had a big schmoz tag team match to end NXT.
Yeah, that was fun. That
Yeah.
I feel like maybe wrestling needs more matches like that, just to fill some TV time, have some fun. There was some storyline movement with Indy Hartwell and Dexter Lumis, which was hilarious.
The fact that she played dead so that he would carry her to the back was just priceless. And her giving the thumbs up and the wink and then going limp again was I don't feel like they've given her much of a chance to do anything other than fawn over Dexter Lumis, but she's really started to lean into it. And it's been a lot of fun and brought out some personality that she's a little bit of a blank slate. What's Austin Theory is already kind of defined his character a little bit. He's dorking it up a little bit more as the sidekick, but Indy Hartwell's kind of a blank slate on me.
Yeah.
So it's good to start to get something to, really kind of give her a little personality. So yeah, but like you said, like there wasn't it wasn't anything crazy, Like it was just a fun match that filled time. Like it's one of those ones that you're just like, everyone's tired after the big show. Let's have a giant match with a bunch of people in it so that no one has to work too hard.
Yeah.
And yeah, and like you said, like it moved things along at least the storyline wise a little bit. So that was kind of fun. I guess to move on over to AEW from the Tuesday show. I'm gonna say that Jeremy did a terrible job of informing yours truly. I hadn't realized that last week I had forgotten that I did not watch AEW. In my yeah, it was something of an oversight when Jeremy and I recorded, so I did not realize that the Young Bucks had made the transition to heels on Dynamite last week.
Yeah.
So I am going to plead ignorance and say my opinion from Tuesday sucked right now. Thursday night. I have now caught up on last week's AEW, this week's AEW, and being the elite in the meantime to really
Oh,
get filled in.
you're run up on me then.
Yeah, that's another one of those screw it, whatever. I watch a lot of stuff on YouTube now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I am all caught up and it's just like yeah, that made sense for them to it still never makes sense for anyone to go through nearly an entire match and then finally change your mind. But, wrestling is what it is, and that's a storyline that always seems to happen. Like, you've got to draw it out and pretend like you're on the bad guy's side or whatever, however you want to term John Moxley. And that, I guess he's the good guy, and you turned on him. I think that part's kind of silly. I guess I really hope that the Young Bucks stick with the character now. Like, they're flip-flopping the last couple of months from baby face to heels to baby faces to now heels again. It's just like, it had felt like they had started to find an identity for themselves, and then they kept switching gears with how their character alignment went. So if they think that their wardrobe change was a major change in style, like they were kind of hinting at, it isn't.
They're just call a spade a spade. They're just such dorks. It's just they could argue that they should be better as heels because they seem like they're naturally, you know, arrogant and aloof about how they come off to the world, regardless. So I guess that's better, but I don't know. Something's just not. It's just. It should be working more with them as heels, but even then, it's not. I'm at the point where I'm just not ever happy to see them.
I have definitely soured on them quite a bit with their time in AEW.
And they're in charge of their own book, of their own creative. This is what they think is a good idea.
Yeah. This is why, again, like, as much as I can blame WWE Creative for not coming up with something for the people that were let go, I think we've talked about this consistently since AEW started. Every wrestler's idea is not going to be a good idea.
Right, no.
Like, and I know that, does Tony Khan act as an editor at all in these situations? Like, I'm not sure.
I think he does. I'm sure he does. And I think it's certainly gotten better. You know, they creatively had their ups and downs over the time that they've been around. But it feels like they've been pretty good with things lately. But the Young Bucks seems to be the real blind spot.
It seems like it's the most head scratching for sure. Like, because Cody has done a good job. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Kenny Omega's character currently, as constituted. I guess I'm fine with him being a heel, and I did like the turn that he kind of had to be when he was recruiting the Bucks, and I definitely think that this was on BTE too, that he seemed more serious about being kind of a bad guy. Because this whole weird, aloof guy who's like, has giant paintings up in his house of him and Don Callis. Like, that's not a good character for Kenny Omega.
No.
You know, this character kind of, to me, is actually channeling more, like, to me, this little bit of a pivot, and I hope it keeps on going that way. Like, it's more in the cleaner style gimmick than that goofy, weird, aloof heel situation. And that needs help in this whole thing too. And I feel like putting the Young Bucks with him might help, you know, like,
yeah, I think it could certainly help. Hopefully that they flesh it out better and they become more self-aware of what is good heat versus what is, you know, go-away heat. And really kind of figure this out, because there's definitely potential here for this group to be strong. And it's, well, when Hangman Page was back with the Dark Order and being interviewed, they mentioned that right now, he is officially the number one contender.
Oh.
But he didn't seem to want to talk about it. He still doesn't want to be. He doesn't want to involve himself in this mess with his former friends. Which, you know, once again, it's a good hook. It's a good, you know, start of a storyline there to get him back involved with them, and to be the next big challenger for Kenny Omega. At the next pay-per-view, I think at the end of May. You know, that could be really good. Because you know what? One of the things people said when AEW was basically announced was, you know what? Kenny should be the first champion, which of course he wasn't. We took over a year to get there. But
right.
Kenny should be the champion, and he eventually should drop it to Hangman Page. I think I may have even brought that up. You know, that's the direction AEW should have gone. You know, should go. And it looks like we might be getting in that direction now.
Yeah, and that has potential to be a lot of fun, because they have done a good job of getting Adam Page. Oh, not that he isn't drinking in his segments.
Yeah.
But he's not an alcoholic anymore.
No, he's not. I mean, he's. You could tell he's conflicted, but of course, for the longest time, Young Bucks were conflicted about their relationship with Kenny Omega. But you tell, Paige is conflicted about this whole thing with Omega and the Young Bucks. So once again, but they could turn that. They could really build that to something. So yeah, no, I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes, because obviously, we can't do Omega versus Moxley again.
Yeah, which was, I mean, I don't even get why those two are kind of hanging out still anymore. Which, because did that happen last week?
Where I think this is gonna, it's where the Moxley part of this is gonna go is him and Kingston are gonna end up challenging the Young Bucks for the tag titles.
Oh,
that would make sense.
Okay. Yeah. And that would be fine.
Yeah, that would be fun. That could be really good.
Yeah. So, yeah. Not the biggest fan, but I do, yeah. I really hope that this is kind of a direction for the Bucks and Omega to go. Like, they have all been lost since they got to AEW, which is just bizarre. Part of it I can understand. I mean, and I think we talked about this in the early days and not so much recently. Like, I felt like they almost went overboard to not make themselves champions too early. And it hurt things.
Now, you know what? I do think that going with Jericho and then Moxley as champion, those were the right moves. Especially if you wanted to drag things out a little more. Get us to a better point, get us to, I think the May pay-per-view is going to be the 2-year anniversary of the first official AEW show. So, they got 2 years out of, what they were doing with their titles. So, that all worked out. But yeah, you're right. In the first, certainly the first year or so of Dynamite. Yeah. Kenny and the Young Bucks. Yes, as I said, they went out of their way to downplay themselves and not be accused of, being all friends wrestling, which they did anyway.
Yeah, and they should. Like, I mean, they still are the biggest names. Like, I may not, and you may not like them as much, but it's pretty clear that the majority of AEW fans are riding with them. So, it's best to have them, get their characters straightened out. I'm trying to think of what other, big stuff happened there. We got Jade Cargill versus Red Velvet Part 2. Was it better than Part 1?
Well, it was technically their first singles match.
Oh, what? Were they in a tag team? Oh, was that a mixed tag match?
Yeah, that was with Shaq, yeah.
Oh, sugar. I don't know why I forgot that. I was thinking that it was a singles match.
But no, I really, really, really enjoyed that match a lot. I definitely one of the people will say I liked it better than the opening Young Bucks tag. It was just because it just felt like a fight. It felt like it had intensity. And Red Velvet's really good, and Jade Cargill is amazing for someone who is in literally her fourth match ever.
yeah, she, 'cause what, they said that she played basketball,
Sure she did. I'm sure she played every sport.
college basketball, and I haven't really, taken the time to see where. But yeah, she is really coming off as you can tell the quality of athlete she is, I guess. If she has that little experience in ring, and
Yeah.
now she looks pretty daggone good, is quite impressive.
Oh yeah, it absolutely is.
So yeah, oh yeah, started training in April of 2019. Okay, yeah. And she kind of trained under Mark Henry. But yeah, I mean, that's still not a lot of experience. To be doing what she's doing, like that is impressive. So, yeah, good for them, good for her. Like, I think that did more for both of them than the mixed tag match, honestly. What did you think about what is he, a boxing silver medalist? Anthony Ogogo?
You know what? He's looked impressive from what I'd seen what I'd seen earlier, and I like what I saw. I think it was interesting. I think it was something different to have him just punch someone in the gut, and then the referee stops the match. That was good.
Yeah, definitely selling the boxing pedigree.
Yeah.
Which I like, and I mean, he did that to Cody the previous week, so there's definitely a theme involved.
This thing with QT and his crew, as long as the focus isn't on QT as a wrestler, this might really work, because you got the two monsters there that really, really do have potential. And at least they look like they could. I don't really know much about the other guy, whose name I don't never will never catch when they say it.
yeah, and I'm not familiar either. But yeah, I think Cody needs a more defined group around him. Like, I guess
Oh
I
yeah.
don't know who's gonna help defend him. Because I mean, I know that technically, he could take all these guys on in one-on-one matches, but I would think that they're going to need some type of multi-person match at some juncture.
Yeah,
And
I mean, obviously, I think.
oh, I forgot. Is it Lee Johnson?
Yeah, Lee Johnson's been given some feature, certainly. You
Yeah.
got obviously Cody's. Obviously, Dustin would be involved. Billy Gunn and his two sons.
Oh, that's how easy I forget about all of those guys.
Yeah, they just introduced everyone all at once and slapped the Nightmare Family tracksuit on them. So yeah, it's easy to get confused and to not remember anybody, because only Agogo, the big dude, and Bailey's ex-boyfriend have actually sided with QT.
Yeah, I guess
so. The rest of those guys who are around ringside, I guess, would stay loyal to Cody, but not really any of those people are recognizable either.
Yeah, that's it. I was almost thinking, fresh face versus fresh face, but yeah, I guess it's going to be old faces versus fresh faces if that kind of situation arises. I mean, I guess Billy Gunn's, is it Austin Gunn? And is there
Austin Gunn? And I don't remember what the other kid's name is. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I thought that there was a third gun.
There is a third gun. There's definitely a third gun. There's definitely a third gun. There's a third son of a gun.
Oh, man. So, yeah, oof, woof. But anyway, I guess
Colton is his name.
I guess Billy Gunn and Austin are big enough to take on a Go-Go and the other large gentleman. So I guess it works out.
Well, like I said, Colton Gunn is the other son.
Yeah.
He had his first match in November, and since then he's had 17 matches, mostly on Dark.
Well, that's probably a good place for him to have matches currently.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that problem's solved there. Yeah, I did like what little I saw from a Go-Go, and he kind of seems like another one where I guess I wouldn't be surprised. They've done a pretty decent job of absorbing athletes here recently, and a boxer would seem to fit right into the fold. Chris Jericho, Dax Harwood. Is the Pinnacle just really getting beaten too easily to start this feud?
Yeah, they are. This is 3 weeks in a row they've taken the drubbing, and two of those are from the hands of Mike Tyson, which is making me wonder if in the end Mike Tyson's turning against Chris Jericho and gonna side with MJF by the time we get to Blood and Guts.
Yeah, I guess that's the only way to really have a payoff in this feud.
Yeah, because we're just seeing the Pinnacle lose left and right. Yeah, it's. I mean, obviously they weren't gonna win that match with Tyson at ringside, or unless they did a turn there, but. No, I mean, and boy did Cass Wheeler take a nice looking punch. I'll just say it was a nice looking punch. Maybe it didn't feel too good.
Oh yeah, the Miz steps up and takes a real one, and everyone else feels like they need to get in on the act, I guess.
Yeah.
Make it look good, man. Just really go for it. Chris Statlander returns to the ring. Oh, and you know what? Yeah, do you have much to put in about her? Because I just remembered something else that I probably scrolled through already.
There's not much to it. She won a squash. She's back. Good to have her back.
Britt Baker.
Oh, she was hilarious. Oh, that was great.
Killed me. Like, I was so happy that I decided, like, I could have just blown off last week's Dynamite, but her promo from last week was just one of the best promos. Like, she is really destroying it. And this week's promo, I don't think it was as good, but it was still downright hilarious. And she is... really been on a roll. Like, this whole your record doesn't matter It's all about ratings and merch is fucking hilarious. She has been one person who has really done a great job cultivating her character.
Yeah, she has. And she made a great point. And that, about how, yeah, you know what? She should now be this number two contender. Because Red Velvet just lost.
Well, and that was the weird thing. I'm like, hold on, how's Red Velvet number one? Like, why isn't...
Red Velvet was number two.
Huh?
Red Velvet was number two. But because she lost, not, now Britt Baker should be number two. Conti is number one, and she's getting the shot next week.
Okay. Oh, that's right. I forgot about Tainara Conti getting the shot next week.
Which, that's the that, I guess, is the value of doing these B shows on YouTube. You just pad people's records, which is exactly what Britt Baker said she was going to do.
Oh.
She said that she was going to run. Britt Baker had squash matches on Elevation and Dark this week. That's how she got the 7 wins this year.
Yeah, well, yeah. That I guess that was part of her brilliance of her promos. Like, her... She does a very good job of being unlikable, but making very good valid points while doing so. So yeah, and then her going out to do the wrestling to boot, makes some sense. It might draw a few extra eyeballs to your YouTube programming if you get one of your hottest acts on there. But yeah, I feel like I would have been remiss if I had not mentioned how great the last 2 weeks Britt Baker's promos have been. And then we get, oh my god. I almost forgot about the whole Team Taz shenanigans with Christian Cage.
Boy, does Taz not like being called short. he seemed legitimately angry.
Yeah, Team Taz is just another one that I have a headache trying to figure out why they just got this team together and they solidified it. And weirdly, for whatever reason, Taz's son went from being a talking point against Cody to fully being on Team Taz without explanation, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
But why they're trying to raise problems still between Brian Cage and Ricky Starks is weird to me. And just seems unnecessary. And then Taz starting a feud with Christian for no reason seems kind of weird too. And... I guess when I thought Christian coming over, I wasn't thinking that he was going to be working with the Will Hobbs of the world. Who definitely need a little more. And maybe that's why he's working with them.
Yeah.
To help gain some of the younger talent a little more polish.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's definitely a good match for Hobbs to have. That match is next week. You know, he gains experience, he gains from being on offense, but it's a match he's not going to win, so no, it works out. Now, as far as the stuff with Cage and Starks is concerned, yeah, you're definitely right. It doesn't make any sense why we're already trying to split up Team Taz. I know there's so many other factions in AEW right now, but I don't think turning Brian Cage babyface is a good move. I don't feel like he has. I've never thought he has any babyface qualities.
Oh,
for sure. And then yeah, if you turn Starks could be a it could be babyface, I think, down the line. I think the best thing for him is to stay heel for right now.
Yeah.
I know they announced a match between Starks and Hangman Page for next week, which should be really good, but also a match you know he's not going to win. So, and we've come far enough in Starks being kind of the designated jobber for Team Taz that it's really time for him to start scoring some big wins. I think yeah. Really scoring wins at all. It should be a good match, but I don't know if Starks needs to be in that situation to take another loss.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Like, I really think Starks has a lot of potential, and he seems like he could be utilized better on Dynamite itself. Like, because, yeah, he's taken a lot of losses and hasn't really gotten any wins in response. And, yeah, it would be good for him to collect those. And then we wrapped up Matt Hardy versus Darby Allin, ended the show, this week. What did you, think of that match?
This certainly turned into a clusterfuck. there's no other word for it, with everyone getting involved. It was messy, it was fun at points, but it also felt like it was trying to mask Matt Hardy certainly not being what he used to be.
Yeah, it's hard to get a good match out of Matt Hardy these days. Like, he really is just, his body is that shot from the beating that he's taken over the years.
Yeah, he absolutely. It's like his thighs and his knees are welded together at this point. It's like he's walking with a lead pipe up his ass. It's he should not be wrestling anymore.
Yeah,
and it's amazing that Jeff has more left than he does, but that's where we're at right now.
I was just gonna say that I'm not really surprised by that. And not that Jeff Hardy had the off time for good reasons most of the time, but I definitely feel like he has taken more breaks from the ring than Matt has over the years.
And you know what? But you know what Matt's biggest problem probably comes from? Doing a leg drop off the top rope, and occasionally off the top of a cage. And occasionally from the top of a ladder, landed on his ass over and over again.
Yeah, and it probably did not help that he was, because Jeff is not as bow-legged as he is.
Yeah,
either.
Bow-legged. I think that was the term I was looking for earlier. Yes, Matt is absolutely bow-legged at this point.
Well, I mean, he kind of mentioned it way back in the day, but I think that that plus the leg dropping really made for a bad lower body combination.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Matt's got to be kind of in matches like this to cover up those weaknesses that he has, because yeah, he's better off as a manager at this point.
Yeah, he absolutely is.
You know,
I mean, I don't get his stable. I don't feel like Private Party make for the best heels, and they don't look right in the same faction with Butcher and the Blade. So nah, I'm not a fan necessarily of how Matt Hardy's group came together and just the aesthetics of them all together. But yes, I think Matt Hardy should be used in any non-wrestling role, preferably as a manager.
I guess, did you want to get into the absolute intense wrestling stuff? Or did you want to save that for another time?
No, let's talk about it, because I'm probably not going to talk about it again. I'm just not a fan of this format. I've mentioned it over and over again. I have moved on from shows in empty rooms, especially with this. This is so it's so darkly lit. Yeah, just they deserve an A for effort for trying to get something done and getting something for their talent to do. But I'm not liking it.
It seems like it's essentially that they're doing a telethon for their wrestlers.
They really are. And I understand that people haven't had work, and I don't know what their real life work situations are either, if they get regular job, what regular 9-to-5s they hold or the wrestlers hold or not. But I'm like, I cringe when people ask for money like that in that setting. So it's just like, especially since there have been other types of things that raise money for wrestlers and whatnot over the last year. Yeah, it's but that's the least of the concerns. I mean, if people want to donate to that, that's great. If the wrestlers really could use the money, which I'm sure many of them could, you know, that's great. It's just not something I'm gonna donate to right at this point in my life.
Right.
But I'm just more thinking about just like as I said. They're trying something, but it's just not working for me. The videos they do before the matches are too long, and these guys' stories really aren't that interesting. Most of them aren't that interesting. And yeah, I just the whole point system and bank money in the bank system doesn't make sense to me at all. I hope they've thought it through, because I have my concerns whether they have.
Yeah, like, there needs to be a point where someone gets their money stolen from them.
Yeah.
Like, for this concept to work, something like that needs to happen along the way. So, I'm giving them a little bit of rope in that department. And we'll see, because yeah, I'm still a little unclear on the concept, to be honest with you, still.
All of that combined, I don't think I'm watching episode 3.
Yeah, I will probably keep doing so, but again, like we'll see. There's a lot of wrestling to consume, and I guess I like the video packages okay, but I am with you. Like, most of the stories weren't that compelling.
Yeah, but I keep coming on here and ragging on AIW because it feels like it's Stunt Granny's home promotion. But I am looking forward to them being back in front of a crowd at the Odeon at the end of the month for two shows.
And I did kind of laugh. Like, I know that you said that you didn't like no crowd. I don't know. I know that they had a very limited number of people, but the very limited number of people that they had in the background of some of the shots made way more noise than people that were at NXT events. Like, I know that it was just like a half dozen people, so it's not like it's some roaring crowd or anything, but there is at least a little bit of ambiance to it. But when you essentially have, I mean, the main event of week one was the only competitive match.
Yeah.
Other than that, it was four squash matches that week, I believe, because I think it's 5 weeks or 5 matches, and then it was all squash matches in just segments the second week.
Yeah.
So and yeah, you know, like there, as much as sometimes the wrestling doesn't matter, like I do want there to be something more compelling. Or, you know, like, there needs to be more stakes than just the Biggins Bucks in just kind of this weird open concept.
Yeah, no, I completely agree.
So, okie dokie. Well, that wraps things up. My Belltime beer of the show happens to be from Olentangy River Brewing Company. It's their Belgian Aloha. I have had this a couple of times on the show previously. It's a Belgian triple with hibiscus. I never knew that a Belgian triple and hibiscus would match so well, but it does, and it's a fantastic beer. And I will miss it when I do not have a six-pack of this anymore. Sue, bell time beer of the show. I think this is just mostly a local one. I'm not sure if this is a state one or not. but if you do happen to be in the Columbus area, I would highly suggest this beverage. So, I'm at DeFrango11. That is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can download us on Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and a whole host of download sites. So just do it and have a good night, grandkids.
Later.